Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, New Orleans, and so glad to be with you on this wonderful Friday. What a beautiful day, and what a packed full schedule we have this weekend. Bucktown Seafood Fest, Boudin, Bourbon and Beer at Champion Square, and of course, LSU, Tulane, Saints. Got a full schedule this weekend, and you know, had a great week, and glad to wrap it up today on Friday. And we have a really good show today, I think. You know, we have a lot of interesting issues. In the third hour, we're going to be talking to Dr. Patrick Waring about this opioid crisis and the trials and tribulations that we're facing today in dealing with this addictive disorder that has affected so many families across this country. In the second hour, we'll be talking to David Hammer, the WWL-TV investigative reporter, about the continuing problems with the Sewage and Water Board and permanent power and everything else that goes along with that. But most importantly, in this hour, we have Howard Hibbard, Army veteran and Bronze Star recipient and an author of a book, The Curse of the Coloring Book. And talking about, you know, oftentimes in over the past several weeks, especially with the NFL controversy, we hear a lot about what we think veterans need. We think we know sometimes, but do we know? And so I was so happy and blessed to get Howard to come into the studio today as he's traveling across the country to join us. Good morning, Howard, and welcome.
So, glad to be here.
You know, we talk a lot about what we think we want veterans, what they need, but do we really know? And it seems as though that you have an interesting observation about a lot of this around that issue.
I think the most important things that veterans want to know is that they're being respected for their sacrifice and for the burden they carry after they return home. Now, regrettably, because of the anti-war movement and because of the whole Vietnam conflict problems, when I got back, all I met was social abuse, and basically I was a social pariah as far as that was concerned. And what I'm trying to push, particularly with this book, but also with the military, I'm sure I'll have a great effect on them. I doubt it, but anyway, is that it's 8 weeks basic training to get in. It should be 4 weeks discharge training and job placement. There should be a national job database that when you get back, you're retrained, you're given clothes, you're given about $7,000 to start a new life, and you get job placement and continuing group therapy just to monitor, you know, how much damage has been done to reintegrate these people. It's going to save us money in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's interesting is, as you said, a lot of training on the way in, preparing you for the horrors of war and what you're going to see. You experience it, you live it, you see it, but yet on the way out, there's no kind of reentry assimilation or anything to deal with the horrors that you've had to experience during that period of time.
Absolutely. And the veteran does not see the world the way other people see the world. You as a sheriff in the paramilitary force we were talking about earlier, you know, never sit with your back against the door. I mean, you know, Hickok was right, and he did it one time, and now we have the dead man's hand, aces and eights.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I mean, it really affects people in all different walks of life. It's not just the military, but, you know, I don't know that anybody actually experiences the horror of battle in everyday society of the trials and tribulations that we face.
Well, that's the whole reason why when someone tells a war story, it just doesn't have the impact because, you know, you say, gee, I was shot at. And the response is, oh, that's too bad. And did you know, good? Thank God they missed you. But you can never have, you can never create that tremendous fear and anxiety of actually being in a situation where with a simple snap, your life is gone.
So tell us about the background of Curse of the Coloring Book. I actually that's what drew me to you, and you know, in reading about that. So tell us about that.
Well, I thought you'd never ask. Anyway, this is a sad. I'm upset by this. When I was 19 at the University of Vermont in 1967, I could have stayed there, minded my own business. You know, got my degree and got an advanced degree in deferments. But one day, I don't know what happened. I was seized by a burst of insanity. I went out and I bought a G.I. Joe coloring book, half a gallon of bourbon, not a good bourbon.
Unlike today, right?
And stole some Denny's crayons at breakfast. Went back to my fraternity house. And I know you're going to find this is unreal. We colored in pictures and laughing and drinking. And I quit school and joined the Army, much to my parents' dismay.
At 19. Right.
Well, that's why all 19-year-olds should be chained somewhere.
Right. And then off to Vietnam.
Well, no, actually, I went to basic training.
Well, basic, right.
Advanced infantry training, officer candidate school. I went to Germany first. And I was in Germany. I was actually a paratrooper in Germany. And after the Tet Offensive, so many company-grade officers, basically lieutenants and captains, were killed. They wiped out probably 20 or 30% of all the lieutenants and shipped us to Vietnam. So at least they only had to do 9 months instead of 12.
Right, and so that's how this started, and then you engage, and obviously you experience the horror of war, and then we're back.
Absolutely,
and then we're faced with the emotional distress of the experience that we had in Vietnam.
Well, in keeping with my constant theme of stupidity, I didn't seek any kind of help. But regrettably, the whole psychological diagnosis of PTSD was not formulated until the 1980s. So in 1970, no one had any idea what to do about it. Regrettably, even though we do know, we're still not doing anything about it. But there's a really good book by Judith Herman, M.D. She's one of the foremost people, called Trauma and Recovery, The Aftermath of Violence from Domestic Abuse to Political Terror, where if anyone has suffering from PTSD, this book is an easy read, and it makes it really clear that the only way to seem to get around this is to reweave your fabric of society that gets torn when you go through a combat situation.
Howard, what was the dialogue around what everyone was feeling at that point in time? It wasn't identified as PTSD, but how was it described and what was the dialogue at that time?
Well, it all goes back to World War I and shell shock, and then in World War II was battle fatigue. So believe it or not, considering how much PTSD costs us today, we've had, you know, from 1918 to past Vietnam, actually even today, where if you had PTSD, you know, it's like George Patton, you know, they'd slap you across the face and say, "What's wrong with you?" And that's just not the way to deal with the problem. The Judith Herman tries to point out that you need to set up a situation sort of like Alcoholics Anonymous, where people who've gone through the similar experience and can validate each other can sit down and just talk and reestablish the trust that people need to live in a society.
You know, so now we're fast forward and we're dealing with the Middle East, both Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, what's going on in Syria and just recently in Niger, and you know, I mean, it's just, we're doing this all over again. Have we changed, you know, our thought process, and are we more receptive to these ideas of trying to deal with this on what I would call, for lack of a better term, reentry?
Well, if you go to my website, howardlhibbert.com, I've got 130 blogs, of which probably 40 or 50 are about the stupidity of, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq. You can't the whole concept about the Middle East is we don't know what we're doing. Right now, the Sunnis and the Shiites are two different sections. It's like the Catholics and the Protestants. Well, regrettably, the Sunnis and the Shiites like to shoot each other or kill each other or bomb each other way more than they have any interest in us. And the sad thing is we're intervening in another civil war. It was North Vietnam versus South Vietnam, and they wanted to be one country. And there we are saying, no, we want to support this puppet government in South Vietnam. And it's the same thing going on in Iraq. I mean, for instance, like right now, Kurdistan. I mean, Iraq was actually never a country. Under the Ottoman Empire, prior to the Ottoman Empire, it was called Kurdistan. And it was part of Syria, part of Turkey, and part of Iran, and part of Iraq. And, of course, that's a volatile situation right there.
Right. Well, we'll continue this conversation when we return. We have to take a break, and we want to hear from you, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. We're with Howard Hibbard, and we're talking about PTSD and what do vets really need when they come back, and we'll continue this conversation. Stay with us. We're back, and we're talking to Howard Hibbard, an Army veteran and Bronze Star recipient, and the author of the book Curse of the Coloring Book, and we've been talking about, do we really know what America's veterans need when they come back from war or service overseas and engaging different enemies throughout the period of time? And so, Howard, you know, let's start with how do we express gratitude to veterans?
Well, regrettably, first of all, when I came
back. Or how should we, I should say.
As long as you just show some respect and respect is not, it's shown in many ways. There's verbal ways, there's nonverbal ways, but much more importantly, respect should be, what do you do to help the veteran reintegrate himself back into society? Veterans don't look at the world the same way. Like when I go out at night, I never sit with my back against the door. I actually learned that from Hickok in the old Western days.
Right.
But there's a certain manner. It's like if I was in Las Vegas, I never would have sat with my back against that building. And I always would have found an exit plan. And I definitely would have known some place to dive in case things get out of control. It's just a real different way of looking at the world. And so if you want to respect that, find a way to make this veteran, you know, take his skills and give him a sense of pride and self-respect that he can come back to society and actually function and be successful.
So it's not, you know, and I always find a lot of times, and I had this, I was telling you earlier, this situation with my uncle who went into World War II at a very young age and rarely talked about his time overseas and saw a lot of bad stuff. And he was 16 or 17 at the time and never did talk about it and just internalized everything. And it's a survival mentality when you're over there, and it's really you're relying on you first and your skills first, and then that kind of reentry, you got to kind of work out of that mindset and that thought process and the way that you view the world, because I got to imagine you're a lot more skeptical of everything because of what's being presented from so many different angles while you're in battle.
I have to agree. But also, I was an attorney for 30 years, and so I'm skeptical anyway.
There you go. But so this mindset is different. So, you know, what are the challenges that the veterans coming back facing today? I mean, I know you talked about the public's reaction to the veterans coming back out of the Vietnam War, which when I look back, you know, I was in 67 when you went in, I was 9. I do remember. And I remember in the early 70s, the response of when the veterans came back. I remember it vividly, and it was confusing to me as a young man, very confusing. And it's one of those things, I don't know that I ever did square it up. I don't know that I ever did understand the anger and the resentment of the folks that had gone overseas to fight for our liberties.
Well, I have to say I agree with you on that one. Because you had people in this country who have been geared for service. I mean, prior to World War II, we were an isolationist country. And then between World War II and Korea, we stepped onto the world stage. And Vietnam was just sort of one of the finales of that extension. But what's really happened, but also people, you need to put it in a frame of reference. I mean, also in the 1960s, you had the civil rights movement. You had the anti-war movement, and then you had this war that made no sense at all. I mean, I know I heard about the domino theory and all these other things, but now they're making our sneakers. And so I just don't understand, you know, the intervention in these areas, and particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, Afghanistan, we control less than half the country now. I mean, there are bombs more people are, I think, like 22, I think over 1,000 people a day are dying in Afghanistan because the Taliban are slowly taking back the country. As far as I'm, and also the other thing that's really interesting is that Afghanistan has Shiites and Sunnis, which hate each other more than the West, for that matter. And now, believe it or not, the heroin that comes out of Afghanistan, which is funding the opium
There's a whole thing about narco-terrorism and everything that goes along with it, just specifically right out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, but Iran, which is a Shiite country, is cooperating with Pakistan in its distribution of heroin around the world. As far as I'm concerned, I think it's time to legalize everything and just get into education. And we make all the DEA officers drug counselors. And I know it's going to be a problem to begin with and have them make
Well,
the
you
jump.
And I will disagree on that one because I'm not going to that extent.
but we're not winning this war either on the drugs.
It's do you ever truly win a war? A war of any type? I mean, when we think about World War II, although it was a victory for the United States, but in many respects, you know, it wasn't a victory much for anybody. I mean, because we immediately went into the Cold War right after that. And so it just took on a different shape, a different form.
Well, considering what Stalin did to Russia and his own people, I think we had a justifiable concern for the Cold War. There's been many documentaries on Stalin.
But that's the point. Did we really win? I mean, because we knew that we had additional threats, when we were sitting in Tokyo accepting all the accolades of the win. But we knew that we were already facing another threat the day after.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, that's the way of the world and sadly enough, the way of mankind. If it's not one thing, it's going to be another.
Well, we got to take another break, and we want to hear from you. 260-1870, if there's something that you want to ask Mr. Howard Hibbert about his experience and his thought process about the treatment of PTSD as it relates to the veterans coming back. We're back, and we're talking to Howard Hibbert, the author of Curse of the Coloring Book, a novel inspired by his own true story of combat, and PTSD. And we were just talking offline here. 22 vets a day commit suicide. That's incredible.
Not only is it incredible, but 22 vets a day is just the tip of the iceberg. It's like 64,000 people die every day of every year of opiates. I mean, what else goes on behind that? How many other hundreds of thousands have drug overdoses and other things that come into play that are behind those 22 veterans dying a day?
The rippling effect is just, it goes on and on and on and on.
And it's outrageously expensive and could be avoided if we just put in the initial capital to get these guys jobs, get them into group counseling, keep controls on them for at least 6 months after they're discharged.
You've used this word a lot, and it's better than reentry, reintegrate.
Correct, because reentry sort of indicates that you had a formula or some education whereby you're readily employable or readily can fit back in. Veterans don't readily fit back in, unless I'm ever going to fit back in, but I've learned to adapt. And so it's a way to give the veterans the education and the capital and the understanding and support so they can feel successful and trust society again. I mean, Vietnam veterans do not trust society because we came back and you spit on us. And that's the first time in American history that a war was blamed on the servicemen and not the politicians who sent us there.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I talked about earlier. I've never been able to square up in my mind. Even today, as almost 60 years of age, you know, and I remember it as a young man vividly and was completely confused by that whole happenstance.
Well, I was completely confused, too.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. Well, let's go to the talk lines. We'll go to John in Ocean Springs on line one. What say you, John?
Gentlemen, good talking to you, and I can really relate to that or what you're talking about. I'm a non-air vet, but I spent 39 months in Germany during the Cold War. And I totally disagree, Kemp. I'm an old guy. Your guest who's saying fitting into society, I don't want to fit into society. The whole problem is a corrupt society, the society that has turned its back on God and Jesus, and I'm a confirmed Christian. And all these problems worldwide, I lived in London 3 years, Germany in the army, Middle East 2 years, and my friends in London say, you know, you go to these big churches. Well, I saw it. and there's nobody there. And until America, which is not going to happen until Christ returns, turns to God, there's no solution because human nature is basically corrupt. And all these wars are political, going back to the Civil War. And these guys, what happens when they come to, down to the nitty-gritty, especially the non-Arab vets, they realize that something is drastically wrong. And no amount of psychotherapy or whatever is going to help. The only thing that will help will be turning to God, which is what I did. I went through depression, so I can relate.
But in a sense, you did reintegrate by doing that. I mean, you know, society is something much, it can be drilled down in as simplistic as just your family, you know, and being able to you know, reintegrate with your family, work within the familial unit. Obviously, for you, it was finding your Lord, and that's the center of your universe. It happens to be the center of mine. I know that I'm not the center of any universe, you know, and I think that's exactly what you were talking about, Howard, in reintegrating in some form or fashion that makes it work for you as a returning vet.
Absolutely. When I talk about reintegration, reintegration does not include that you like what's going on. All reintegration means that you can come back to society, find a way to support yourself, have your family, live your life the way you want to live your life on your own ideas in a free country. So whatever, however you want to do it is fine with me. God, it doesn't matter. Buddhism, whatever makes things work for you so that you can be a productive member and feel, you know, confident and happy with your existence.
And, you know, there's this sense of obligation, I think, by us, meaning the community at large, the citizenry of the United States, and obviously the United States government. We've had a lot of different issues talking about veterans affairs and the hospitals across this country that provide care and custody for the veterans when they return, the veteran hospital system that is in disrepair in many respects as well. And I think it was kind of one of the cornerstones of President Trump's candidacy where he talked about that issue and it became an issue in the presidential race. But are we ever getting anywhere with relative to that issue?
I think it's doing better, but luckily I'm in the Bay Area. And so Palo Alto, the healthcare system, is just the best I've ever seen. It is amazingly good. There are other parts of the country that don't have the funding that California does. And so it's really different. But when once again, the important thing is if we could have a plan to get these people a coping mechanism so they can deal with society, whether they want to go to God or whether one or do something else, but find a way to support themselves and enjoy the benefits of living in a free society.
So we're going to take another break and we'll be right back. We want to hear from you, 260-1870. We're talking about how do we show respect and gratitude to America's vets. We think we know. We talk about it. But do we really know? We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text 870-870. This is Newell Norman on WWL. We're back, and we'll go to the talk lines. Bernard in Covington. What say you, Bernard?
Good morning. How y'all doing today?
Doing great.
Listen, I have a different theory about this because I wrote a book about the Civil War. And basically, I believe the Civil War was actually the first real empirical evidence we've seen of the thousands of cases of mental disorders after combat because we were fighting amongst each other, Americans against Americans and so forth. But there's many cases, and I cited some in my book about the Union soldier Isaac Page, who came home from many battles at Gettysburg, Fredericksburg, and ultimately they kept sending him to mental asylums. He ultimately killed his wife one day. He didn't remember even doing it, came home and killed his wife. And then, unfortunately, like many you talk today, it was a suicide case. So I think you can go a lot further back. And I've studied all the major wars and Vietnam especially. And I totally thank the gentleman for his service. Amen.
Well, Bernard, thank you. Let's get, you know, Howard and your thoughts. I don't think you deny that. I mean,
absolutely. As a matter of fact, there was a really good documentary on the Civil War.
So, you know, we got just a couple minutes left, so why don't we round this up and you know, talk about where you think we should go from here?
Well, I think the most important thing that I would like to suggest is that there be a reintegration of 1 month to get veterans the tools they need to come back and succeed and not feel alienated, and get, and particularly a way to deal with PTSD so that it's not looked upon that you're weak. And that's one of the big problems with veterans when they go to the VA. They're not trained. So what I would tell veterans is go to your local vet center. They will explain to you what you have to tell the VA, and you just can't play macho. You've got to tell them how you really feel so that you meet their protocols. If you don't meet their protocols, then you're not going to fit in because it's a gigantic government bureaucracy. But the vet center can help you with that. Also, if you want to really see how PTSD manifests itself, Curse of the Coloring Book is about this attorney who has flashbacks. And that's exactly what I see every single day when I'm walking around. And it will give you a good frame of reference. And a psychiatrist said that read this book, says she thinks it's the most visual. Sorry.
Well, we've had Howard Hibbert in with us. We really appreciate your time, and thank you so much. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.